This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
I'm Chase Ralston with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Hey, this is Jules McQueen, and you are listening to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast.
It's really, really not that good.
Working class.
This is the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast, and by golly, we're glad to have you.
Once again.
This is episode 402, and I'm your host, Kurt Geyer, and with me today is...
Eric Hammond.
And also...
Dave Schmidt.
A.K.A. Dale.
What's up?
Thank you for being here. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Idiots.
Yeah, no more dumb stuff for the rest of the podcast. See what we did? Got it right out of the way. No, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the shit out of you. The podcast is presented by HHA Sports, and they were kind enough to give you a code, WCB15. Also, Scent Crusher, Loophole, Thermoseat, which we have our own Working Class Thermoseats on workingclassbowhunter.com now, or if you go to Thermoseat's website, WCTS is the code there. Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors, our new favorite lifestyle brand from local to us right here in Iowa, GatorOutdoors.com. Use code WCB10. Right now, you can get that code on Scent Crusher stuff, True Timber Camo, and all Gator Outdoors apparel. Elite Archery, the new bows just dropped. You can go to their website, use code WCB, and save yourself some coin. Have your bow shipped to a local bow shop. Pretty cool. Give them back both ways. Big time, WCB 2020 saves you 20%, I believe, on everything big time. Supplemental feed, food plot seed, swag, whatever you need. And Old Barn Taxidermy. If you shoot a buck or any type of critter that you're getting mounted, preferably like a shoulder mount, go in. Say, hey, I listen to Working Class Bowhunter. They told me about this this whole giveaway you're doing. If I bring a shoulder mount, you're going to like put me in a drawing to win a shoulder mount for next year if I'm like that good a hunter.
Put your name in a sweaty hat and draw your name.
That's right. Old Barn Taxidermy. Fort Madison, Iowa. They have a Colorado location. And they have drop-off points throughout the Midwest to get you to there. Chances are, if your taxidermist is big enough, he uses Old Barn's tannery there in Fort Madison, Iowa. So even if you're not aware you're an Old Barn customer, you might already be because your taxidermist contracts through them for their tannery business.
That's right.
They do it all. It's pretty amazing, the community and the taxidermy game that they're building. Kind of offering.
And now they're doing deer processing, too, if you're local to the area.
Yeah, they do all things dead. That's a bad slogan, but I like it.
It's not that bad, though. I like it.
It's not that.
All things dead.
Straightforward.
All things dead. Old barn taxidermy. Yeah.
Well, that's our new marketing.
Hopefully, I like
slogan
it.
Slogan there.
And you know what I love? That like they actually listen. So they'll be driving, and then they'll hear that, and they'll be like, all things dead, t-shirt done. Kurt's a genius. And just making stuff up on the fly. That's what we do best here.
Questionable. We're the best at it.
You know.
Hey.
It is.
What it is. That's right. See, we got all the dumb stuff done at the beginning. Yep. And see, now it's the smart stuff. Don't do that. What's going to happen?
Is there anything smart about us?
So here's what I want to do. Not really.
No.
Do you have a veteran shout-out, Doug?
I do.
I think it'd be wise to do the veteran shout-out now before I get mad.
Let's do the veteran shout-out now.
And then let's do it now.
Should we get the guest on before I do my rant? Or should I do my rant and then have our guest on?
Let's
do your rant.
Right. Because you're about to go.
Only smart things up, right?
Yeah.
All right. This is sent in by Josh Eisenhoff. The veteran name is Brian Cheeser. He's in the Army. Brian is a working class family man, retired from the Army. He just bought an archery shop in Herndon, Kentucky.
Hopefully
I said that right. To save it from closing its doors. Currently named Herndon Archery. He's an avid hunter and an outdoorsman and cares about the community and industry. Nobody deserves a shout out more, in my opinion. I'm starting a whitetail outfitter in Western Kentucky called Legacy Outfitters, and Brian has been super supportive and helpful in getting us connected to the veteran community and local nonprofits. So
very cool.
Thank you for your service, Brian. Good luck with your archery shop.
Yep. Yeah, and the outfit business.
And the outfitter, Josh. And cheers, boys. Thank you for your service.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your service. Man, that's cool. Saving some outdoor community industry, I guess. Local industry.
Doing it big.
I felt good about myself today. I was at the gas station, you know, running. Hey, I need $30 on pump 3. Older gentleman in front of me, and he's buying 2 Reese's. And his debit card got declined 3 times. I'm like, let me get it, you know, let me get it.
Yeah.
Turned around, had a retired Army hat on.
That's cool.
So I'm like, hey, I'll get it. Don't worry about it. And he turned around, and I'm like, well, hey, thank you for your service. He goes, well, God bless you, son. Thank you.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, that's cool.
That felt good, didn't it? God bless you, son.
I almost cried. I got chills. It was pretty cool.
Then you're like, can I get one of your Reese's?
Yeah. Can I just get one?
I love those things.
Yeah. I love those things. I have one. That's cool.
Hey, I bought them.
Hey, that's awesome. It's the little things, right? But that's cool. Oh, yeah. Saving an archery shop, starting an outfit business. It's the American dream.
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty cool. We need somebody to come down and drink a beer and shoot a bow into the wood at your archery shop. Just call us up.
Keep it out of the wood.
Keep it out of the wood.
And then if you need somebody to kill a velvet whitetail in Kentucky, you know,
hey,
call you up.
Let us know.
Yeah, we'll be down. We'll podcast with you. We'll help you out.
He's like, they call you boys.
He's like, these guys are assholes.
Yeah. We're not calling them.
Never hear from them again.
All right, I guess this is here. I go. I don't know if I'm going to go on a rant. I thought I was feeling a little froggier, but I'm more feeling silly than I'm feeling froggy here. But let me tell you a quick story here before we get our guest on. And this goes, man, it pissed me off at the time. I'm over it now. Hunted this would have been 3 days ago, 3 nights ago. I hunted a new piece of property that I picked up through some friends. They're like, hey, you know, we've never hunted it. We have permission to hunt this piece, a smaller piece. Why don't you come out, check it out and stuff? You know, we don't have any stands on it. We've hung trail cameras. There were some really big bucks on it. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll just hang and hunt the whole thing, you know, move around and just see what I can figure out.
Figure out the property.
Yeah, and I didn't plan on hitting it too hard this year, but, you know, it was something I was really looking forward to for, you know, down the road. Anyway, had a couple, 3 really big bucks on that property. I checked the first camera, and I'm like, well, there's nothing on here now, which is weird. And I go out, and I thought we were supposed to be the 3 exclusive guys on this piece to keep trespassers off and whatnot. I look down. This has nothing to do with the main point of the story, but this is just kind of turned into like the clusterfuck of
how your day was,
right? So I look down. There's a box blind in the middle of this cut bean field.
Like on wheels. Like someone pulled it out there.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, called my buddy who, and I have permission. Like the owner of the property knows I'm there, but I don't have his contact. So I call my buddy who does, and I'm like, hey, dude, there's a box blind in this field. Is there something I'm missing or, you know, whatever? He goes, it shouldn't be there as far as we know. Like, I would just hunt as normal, dude. Do your thing. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I walk by this blind. It's set up just for gun season. Like, you can tell it's got gun.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
So, and that's, you know, a month away. And so it was just parked out there, probably just so they get used to it, whatever. I'm like, all right, whatever. It's fine. I don't know. I don't know who else is out there. Maybe they have permission. Maybe they don't. Strong effort either way.
A lot of balls if they don't have permission.
But I had a trail camera over there, and I'm like, that trail camera's gone. Like, I thought for sure. So I go up, check that trail camera. No big bucks, but lots of people. Guys on side-by-sides, guys on four-wheelers, guys walking.
People walking, looking right at it.
Oh, yeah, pointing, getting off. I'm sure they opened it up and looked, but they didn't steal them, so that's kind of cool.
That's good.
So then I have two more. I walk in, get to my next one, same shit on it. And this is in a little bit more. And then I didn't even go down far enough to my other one. I'm like, yeah, okay, I know what this
pattern. You already patterned this already.
Yeah, no big bucks. The big bucks that were there, gone. That just right there, human intrusion, they're out of there. Like those dudes had no idea there's big deer there. My whole thing was like, cool, big deer, I'm going to stay out of there and figure it out on the fly because that's just effective, and for me anyway. So I go in, do a hang and hunt, hang my stand, hunt, sit there. Because
you're in there. You're like, I might as well hunt it and try it.
Well, then it's a 45-minute drive from my house, the opposite direction of the other 45-minute drive the other way that I would go to another property. I wanted to leave and go back, but I'm like, well, I got to drive 45 minutes.
Just ain't enough time.
To get even to my house and then 45 minutes the other way to get to where I hunt in the other piece. So too far of a drive. So, yeah, not enough time. So I get in there. Feels good. I hang my stand. I'm like, ah, cool, man. I'll actually be surprised if I don't see something tonight. It was just felt really nice. Nothing. Whatever. Pull my stand. Get down. And it's like that time where it's past legal shooting light, but you can still kind of see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're in the woods, you need a light. But if you're in the open, you can walk.
Yeah, if you're in the woods, you're getting down.
Yeah. So I got down. Pack everything up. I got my stand on my back. I'm going out. I pull the one camera. And then there's like this little 40-50 yard stretch of woods. And there's like, I drove my Ranger through there. So it was like a little path, but the other Yahoos were driving their four wheeler through there because they probably saw where I drove my Ranger or whatever.
Right. A little four wheeler path.
Yeah. So I walk that and I have my stand and everything on my back and I'm holding my bow. And as I'm walking, I'm kind of like, cause I'm on the fence line, but I'm like well in on the property we have permission on. And I'm like, man, I've never been out here. Like, I wonder. I just hope nobody else is, like, hunting on the neighbors and, like, see. I was more just scared of being surprised in the dark in the woods. And, like, it's hard to explain. These woods are kind of, like, a creepy feel anyway. And that's just something you can't explain until you, like, feel it, whatever. And I never have that feeling. I've been walking in the woods my whole life in the dark.
Yeah, some woods just have that weird feeling.
They have that eerie feel.
I've been to a public spot where it's just, like,
weird.
Yeah, this is fucked up.
I had this piece, there's a bunch of abandoned shit all throughout the woods and stuff. So just, it just has that. It just humanized stuff in the woods is scary.
It is weird.
So I'm walking through this path. I get up to the opening where my other camera was, kind of by that box spot. I'm like, all right, I'm going to pull this camera because I don't want it to get stolen. And I was already kind of like, well, I'm probably never going to come back here because of just all the shit. You know, I don't know what's going on.
Plus all the people running through there and everything else. They're blowing everything out of there.
Yeah. So I get to the opening and I hear something to my right. Like over on the fence line, and I look over and I see like the silhouette of somebody standing like 10 yards from me. And it's fucking dark. And he says something, but I don't really hear him. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I jump up because, dude, it scared the shit out of me.
Which it would anyone.
Well, yeah, in the dark in the woods, you're not expecting to hear somebody say something to you, you know, like, especially if it was like a night, somebody nice, like, hey, buddy. You'd be like, oh, shit.
Hey, just passing by.
Hey, yeah. How are you?
Yeah, hey, how are you? But that'd almost be creepier. but it scared the shit out of me. Like jumped out of my skin. Like never had that happen before in the dark anyway. And I'm like, God damn, dude, scared the fuck out of me. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like already on the defense and I think he went, oh fuck is what he said. And then he's popped up and he was in a full ghillie suit with a fucking crossbow.
Jesus.
And what, like, dude, I'm not going to lie, for like 0.3 seconds, like Sasquatch. Like he stood up and I was like, oh shit. And it was, I couldn't see him. It was that dark. I just saw a silhouette of him. And that's only because he was like sort of skylined, you know?
Ghillie suit, Sasquatch kind of look to it. Hair. Right.
And nice, he was a big dude.
Nice hair.
He ended up looking like Farva, actually. And I hope he listens to the podcast because fuck you. But I get up to him. He goes, I almost shot you. And I'm like, what? And he goes, I almost just shot you. I thought you were a buck with those sticks on your back because I had my stand and sticks and stuff sticking over my head. And the whole time I'm like, and he's on the neighbor's ground.
And you're across the fence.
He's on the other side of the fence.
On the other side of the fence. It's way too dark. It's way past shooting hours at this point.
It's fucking dark. The only way he could see me or see what I was because he was looking through his scope. You know how the scope brings in more light?
Yeah.
That's fucking scary.
He goes, I almost shot you, dude. I thought you were a buck. So he heard me walking. I had my light off because I always try to walk in and out with my light off.
For sure.
Not no
for
more. Sure. Well, I ain't going back to that place. And I was on the defense. Like, if I wouldn't have been on the defense and, like, scared kind of out of my own britches, like, I think it would have went different. But I was like, I couldn't even, he was talking to me and I couldn't even hear what he was saying because I was like still trying to calm down. Like, it scared me that bad. And,
you haven't been that scared in a while, have you?
I don't think I've ever been that scared. Honestly, as an adult.
Oofta.
And people might be laughing at me. It scared the shit out of me, man. Like,
that would scare the shit out of anyone.
In the dark, yeah. Like, and I didn't really, like, I kind of talked to him for a second and I told him, I was like, I'm never coming fucking back here. Like, you'll never see me again, whatever. And I basically, like, grabbed the other camera, and I had this, like, insanely long walk out. It was a long walk out. Like, I beat feet for a while walking out of there.
You're probably on your toes the whole time.
Well, then I was just thinking about it, right? Like, I was relaxed now. I'm like, nothing's going to scare me more now. Like, I'm just fucking pissed at this point. Like, somebody try and fucking scare me. I'm going to beat you with my bow.
Yeah, but you almost got shot, bro.
But here's the thing. I was so scared by him, and he said, I almost shot you, and I, like, was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, like, you just thought I was a deer. Like, you weren't actually almost going to shoot me. And then on my walk out, I'm thinking, I'm like, no, this motherfucker almost shot me. He heard me walking, and what he did, he said, fuck the boundary, because I'm on the other side of the fence. And by the way, he's hunting on the other end of the fence, too. So he's hunting two neighbors' fence line. And he's like, I always sit right here, you know, and I'm thinking, you're an asshole. And I walk out, and I bet you he had his scope on there, and I bet you he saw a body because it was so dark that he saw, like, a figure of a body.
And sure. He saw your sticks thinking as a rack.
And I bet you he was, like, going to chest shoot me like he was going to chest shoot a buck. And I bet you he was doing that. And then when I heard him, I bet you he went, oh, fuck, when he realized it was a human and not a deer.
Because you got closer.
Yeah.
Because I recognized what you were.
Yeah. And I kind of realized that on the walk back. I'm like, wow, I think I was closer to getting shot by a fucking crossbow than I even realized. Because I was distracted by being, like, startled by him, you know? And it's not that, like, I saw him. The noise scared me, you know? Like, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I jumped. Imagine being scared by a turkey off the roost in the morning in the dark times, like, 10. That's what it was. So
everyone's been there.
So I'm like, I called my dad. I'm like, yeah, I almost got fucking shot by a crossbow hunter in a ghillie suit sitting on the fucking ground. So I wonder if he was filming. He had like a bunch of plastic little Plano cases on the ground. I wonder if he has any of this on film. I actually talked to him, and I kind of, like, regret even talking to him. Like, I should have been way more aggressive with him. Like, maybe not. But, like, in my head, I kind of feel
just
like
let him know that.
I should be like, you. Anyway,
what are you doing?
Here's the thing. And this is probably where the rant part comes in. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because we have a podcast to do here. But I think there's a lesson in this. I was on private ground where I had permission. Maybe I should have had my lamp on, my light on. But also, it's not my responsibility. It's dark.
Yeah,
and exactly. I'm on private ground.
I don't use light either.
Here's the thing. I don't hate crossbows. I don't hate guns. I don't hate rifles. I don't hate shotguns for hunting. Do that if you want. Here is the problem that people have with those things. It's not the weapon. It's typically the fucking people.
It's a dumbass behind the weapon.
And here's the thing. What happens is it's easier than a compound. It's easier than traditional equipment. Of course, we all know that. We're aware of that. And that is part of the problem with it, right? Like, it shouldn't have the same seasons as regular archery season. And this dude was an Iowa resident hunting in Illinois. And, like, he had, like, 20-acre piece. So, anyway, that's besides the fact. So, what the problem is with it, I think, it attracts pieces of shit that all they want to do in life is cut corners, and they don't have any ethical boundary in their mind. They don't have any value for the life of an animal, let alone a human life, because they're just shooting at fucking movement. This is a statistic that you read about or learn about in your hunter safety class, and you think, like, how did that person get shot? Because it's mouth breathers like this motherfucker who are shooting at movement in the brush.
Mm-hmm.
That is the reason. And dude, I'm not gonna lie. I was sad. If you would have turned the mic on me right there, I would have said a bunch of shit that I would have got a lot of stuff for, like, a lot of shit for later. Because at that moment, I was like, fuck crossbows. Get rid of them all. Unless you're injured or a kid or elderly, you don't get a crossbow.
Right.
If you do, you hunt during firearm season only, and the tag's 10 times as much as a regular archer
season.
But
how close were you to be that statistic in a fucking hunter safety course?
Closer than I actually know.
Yeah, way closer. You'll never really know.
Closer than you ever thought you would be.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he said, oh, fuck, because he almost shot me. And here's the thing. You might disagree. You might hunt the crossbow. I have nothing against that. But that's the problem with it. You get fucking idiots like this that cut corners. It's easier so they do it. And it's not for you. It's not for those people. Take some responsibility. One, don't shoot across the property line, first of all.
Yeah, that's illegal.
Like, you are exactly... I hope he listens. I hope he fucking knows. I told him my name wasn't shit. I just hope maybe, like... I don't know if I had... I did have the logo on. I have a hat on that said WCB at the logo and shit. I hope he sees it and checks it out and hears this podcast and feels like a fucking dumbass. I hope you get caught doing some shit like that and never hunt again. I was fucking pissed, man. I wish I would have been, like, more clear-headed because I probably would have ripped him a new asshole. But instead, I was, like, fucking trying to... settle my heart rate.
Yeah, you're
back
trying
down.
To survive.
You're at survival point.
But anyway, I'm not trying to like change what this podcast is going to be. I just felt like that was worth mentioning.
Unless, you had to mention it.
Yeah. I literally almost got shot on private ground.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be different. If I'm in public, I'd be like, good chance I'm going to run into somebody, you know, but I have my light on and you know what I'm saying? Like, I would've had all that going on. Yeah. It's fucked up. I would have ruined my, night.
I think it ruined your life.
Yeah, probably been dead. But anyway, be careful out there.
Put a rage in the cage.
Be responsible, yeah. Jesus. The dude was probably shooting field points. He didn't fucking know. I didn't know I needed broadheads. He's that type of guy. He looked like Farva from Super Troopers.
Maybe it was.
Probably like a liter of cola.
And he's sitting with the wrong wind. You're dumb, you know that? You're just stupid.
You're just an idiot.
And I don't like that word either. I don't like calling people dumb. Unless it's like Steve or like this fucking guy.
You know? He definitely deserves being called fucking dumb.
Yeah. Anyway, that's scary. Be careful out there.
Careful out there.
Hey, turn your headlamp on.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Turn on red at least.
Turn on red, man. Turn it on red. I had the old Milwaukee headlamp on. Who didn't have a red option.
Throw a fucking road flare on your head.
Yeah. That's what I was telling some guys at work about. I'm like, yeah, I almost got shot. And they're like, yeah, you need one of them, get one of them combine beacons. Little road hazard lights.
Or just shoot a road flare in the air.
Yeah.
Like the gun.
Yeah.
So they know you're coming out.
Dude. Closer than I know, man. Closer than I know.
Scary.
Scary for sure.
Scary shit out there.
Thankful it didn't
happen.
Be careful
out there.
Protect your neck. It's crazy out there. Protection. All right. Let's get on with the podcast. Sorry about that. Thanks for listening to my rant, but I think there's a lesson in there somewhere. I don't know where, but there's one. Either don't be an idiot or watch for crossbow hunters.
Just think about it, you know?
Yeah. New shirt coming. A guy with a crossbow and a ghillie suit, and it's going to say protect your neck.
Protection.
That's probably... There's
so many new shirt ideas that we just forget about.
I know. Yeah, there's a bunch of gems lost. There'll be some other copycat podcast that's going to pick up all our slack and just start producing the ones we forgot about.
They just have a shirt company.
Just making money.
Hey, you know who you are.
Picture a Doug on it. Like, what?
Yeah, picture... Yeah.
That's me on the shirt.
It is what it is. What?
Quoting us directly.
Yeah.
Like, I said that, man. That's
fucking me.
That's me.
I'm the guy in the picture.
Yeah. That's Dale, man.
No, you're not.
Hey, you, that's Dale.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a bunch of, I don't want to go into it. All right, let's get on with the podcast here. Hope you enjoy. Sorry about that. Okay, my rant is over, and we have our guest on, Emily Shad. What is up?
Hey, how is everybody?
We're good.
Not too bad.
It's been almost 100 episodes since you've been on, so thanks for coming back. We thought we had scared you off for good, but apparently not.
She answered the phone, so she definitely came back.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm back.
So I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this because I know you won't. I think right now you are probably the most legit female whitetail killer in the country that is like doesn't have a show on Outdoor Channel or something crazy like that.
Well, I'd love to think that.
Well, I think it's hard to deny it. I mean, you've killed some giant bucks on your own. You don't have somebody doing this for you.
Holding your hand the whole time.
Yeah. You're not doing it for the gram, as the kids like to say. So that's my introduction for you, but just kind of tell people who you are and where you're from and what you're about if they haven't heard your last podcast.
Where your hunting property is and all
coordinates
and all
coordinates.
We need all that info.
How much a tag is.
Details on where I hunt.
Right.
Well,
right.
I am Emily Shadd, obviously. I am from Southeast Ohio, so that's mainly where I hunt. I've been hunting. This year will be make my 16th year of bow hunting with the compound. So, you know, I'm bow only. I kind of did a post on my Instagram the other day, kind of a little backstory about my bow hunting history. But so, yeah, that's me. You know, I do everything, try to do everything on my own, learn everything on my own, and try to be self-sufficient. And pretty much I'm my worst, kind of like my worst enemy. I'm extremely hard on myself to try to make myself do better and, you know, kill bigger deer and everything like that. So, yeah. This is who I am.
It's very cool. And I think that's a trait, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You're hard on yourself. That's a trait of big buck killers, I think, no matter who you talk to. Yeah. It's yep. Striving. It's challenging yourself to figure out this whitetail and beat him at his own game. So,
yep, exactly.
That's super, that is cool. And it's sad that like we have to emphasize on that type of thing, you know, you being a female, but it's, the internet is so flooded with just bullshit with female hunters. That we have to like say this, and it sucks. And does that suck for you?
I think we're in the 100-year flood right now.
It really
is so flooded.
It really does. I mean, it sucks because unfortunately, it seems like a lot of females have a bad rap, and you know, with Instagram and the hunting industry and stuff, because there's just so many. You know, you get so many, you know, fakes and, you know, all the stuff with TikTok going around right now. And I mean, it's awful. I can't even stand to watch half of it. So it's just, you know, it's really rough for me because I feel like everybody is getting that rap, you know,
right.
You know, and that name for themselves, even though there's a lot of us that are not that way, unfortunately. So,
well, that's, you know, that's part of the goal here with the podcast and stuff is, you know, if we interview, and this sucks to have to say this, like it sucks to go back, but I just want to get this out of the way and move on. This is why we interview female hunters like yourself. Like if we're interviewing a female hunter, it's because we think they're legit and they're doing things the right way, and we want to throw like whatever little light we have in the game that direction, because that's where it needs to go.
Absolutely.
And the rest of it just that I still believe it's gonna go away. It's just gonna take some time. TikTok didn't help, but anyway,
I don't think it's going away.
It's going to go away. It'll taper off eventually. Eventually, people are going to quit giving a fuck about all that dumb fake shit, and they'll see through it. It's starting,
I hope
dude.
So.
I hope
I
so,
really
too.
Do.
It's starting. People are seeing through it now. It's starting to get more transparent. People are seeing through the bullshit.
Yep.
But
yep, exactly.
Emily, last time you were on, we talked about another giant you had killed. But
yes.
I'm basically going to talk. Let me bring up to what I knew about this story just from Clint. And then I want you to basically take that and give us the full rundown on this whole deer and everything that happened.
Sounds good.
So I called Clint. It would have been the day you shot this deer on my way to the stand, bullshitting with him. I get out of the stand and I called him back to finish our conversation because I have kind of a long drive from my property. And he's like, dude, I'm driving. I've got to go help Emily recover this buck. Fucking giant, dude. Like, it's a monster. Like,
one, two. And if you get a long drive to your stand, Clint's a perfect guy to call because he'll make that time go by real
and
fast.
And he'll motivate the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, he kind of like builds us up. He's like, dude, I'm talking like big. Like, this deer is big. And he kind of gave me the backstory. So then I see a trail cam photo and I get some teaser pics, you know. And then that's where you take over and I shut up and you tell the story about this deer.
Okay, I can do that. So, the freak is what I call this deer.
Which he is.
Yep, he is definitely a freak. How he got his name was in 2018 is when I really started getting a lot of history and knowledge of this deer. It was in 2018. I called him the freak because we're thinking now that he might have gotten hit by a car or something. So, one side, it would have been his left side was completely screwed up in 2018 and 2019. And he had a big normal side on his right side 2018, 2019. So that's where he got the freak name from because he was a legitimate freak for 2 years. but this particular deer, I'll give a little bit of history on him. So I started getting trail camera pictures of him here this year, the 3rd or 4th of October, right before that red moon hit, 2019. I photographed him in August. I never got another trail camera photo of this deer until the week after bow season. And when he showed up, he had already shed one side.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. And then 2018, I had loads of pictures of this deer constantly, daylight, evening, nighttime, everything else. But like I said, he was screwed up on one side. And then on his good side, he completely broke his whole antler off, clear to his huge brow tine. So he honestly looked like a tree. Like, he had this huge brow tine, split brow on one side, and this big, funky Christmas tree looking thing on the other side. Like, you couldn't even tell what the heck was going on with this deer. So, and that was 2018. So he would have been six and a half years old.
Damn.
In 2018. So 2017, I never had any pictures of the buck at all. That's when he would have been five. 2016. When he would have been four, I had, on a different property, I had one daylight photo of him, about three or four photos there in daylight on one day. And they weren't even good photos. Like, I couldn't really, I realized after I killed the deer and somebody sent me, the neighboring landowner had sent me pictures of him that year that I had pictures of. It didn't even dawn on me that that was him because they were bad angled photos.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So, you know, really I didn't start getting a lot of history with the deer until, you know, 2018.
So let me ask this. You said your neighbor sent pictures. Do you guys, I'm assuming you guys have a good relationship, but do you guys communicate often on deer that you guys both might have on the property, or is it like after the deer is dead, then the secrets can come out a little bit?
Pretty much. I'm the type of person that I don't share any information with anybody. Neighbors, nothing. The only people that I share I share information with is my couple best friend hunting buddies that live out of state, and then Clint. So, you know, you can't really tell anybody anything around here, or everybody will be coming in and trying to hunt in your tree stand. That's how it goes around.
Same over here. Yeah. It's nobody can blame me for that, especially on this type of buck.
Right.
Yep. So they had more history with the buck than I did, because obviously they were an owner of the land. They're kind of neighboring, and I really didn't start. I mean, I've been hunting this general area for a long time, but really not the actual property that is where I killed him. I've only hunted that particular property for like 3 years. So they've had history of the deer since he was 2.5. When I was going back through my photos, I believe I actually have photos of him at 2.5 as well.
No kidding. Did he look similar? Or, I mean, how are you figuring that out?
He was an absolute, if it is him at 2.5, I shared the photos of them. They're thinking that it's him at 2.5, but we're not 100% sure. He'd have to look back through photos, but he had the same, I mean, at 2.5, he was an absolute giant. I mean, he had a huge, big frame. He had the huge, big split brow. I mean, he looked, I can't remember if he had both brows were split or just the one, but he looked very similar. The frame was similar. I mean, he was an absolute stud as a 2-year-old. Most people would have shot him because he was so big at 2 even.
Right, right. Like, how big? Like, if you had to put an inch number on him, what'd you think?
This picture that I have of this particular deer, if it is him at 2.5, I would think that he would be probably the 140s range.
That's impressive.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard to pass a 140 sometimes.
I guess.
Well,
yeah,
it's hard for me to pass
probably around 140. Yeah.
It's impressive at 2.5.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, yeah. So he was definitely a stud then. So really, the history of this deer is kind of weird because during that whole time period, you know, was when I killed Flyer 10 that I was after for several years that the last podcast was about.
Yeah, yep.
But just because I didn't really know much about this deer, I never saw him often enough to really say, okay, I'm going to set out this year to kill this deer only, because it's like he hardly ever showed. He was very unpredictable. I mean, he was a deer that would avoid any sort of area where there was a food source. You know, if you were trying to feed mineral and stuff like that, he would never show up on a camera. He'd always show up in every other place but that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was just a really tough deer. You just never knew you know, what he was doing.
He had that big buck mindset from a young age.
Yeah. So, and once he got older here, his range that he traveled was like nothing. Like, he stayed in one spot because
Super interesting.
Because I would hunt at the one, because I hunted at both ends of this property, and he would never come to the top end. He would always just stay at the bottom end.
Was that before or after his racket? Like, when you be, like, before or after you think he got hit by a car?
This was after.
After, so do you think, like, that of him being hit by that car, he just kind of kept to his core area and just kind of stayed there because he was maybe scared of getting hit by a car again? You know, you never know.
I mean, it could be anything like that. I mean, it could be, you know, a lot of pressure. Maybe there was a lot of pressure in, you know, another neighboring areas.
You hear a lot, the older a buck gets, the smaller his home range gets too, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
I know every deer is an individual, so it can change, but, you know, I mean, my Creepy wasn't as, you know, as old as or as big as this buck, but I don't think he left a 30-acre circle, honestly.
Well, and that my 8.5-year-old I shot, I never had a single picture of him.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and he could have been, he could have came from 10 miles away. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. You just, you really never know about him. And this deer, there was a couple of particular areas that never got any pressure that honestly is where he always stayed at. I always had a feeling that's where he stayed. And that's kind of what I figured out over time. That's where he was staying. And it was the stupidest place ever that a deer would stay. But honestly, those big bucks, the bigger and older these bucks get, the crazier places that they will bed up and they will stay, and people would never even think of it. And that's why they live so long,
absolutely,
to be honest.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and this deer was one of those deer. I mean, he stayed in the craziest place that you would never even think of a buck staying, but that's where he stayed, and that's kind of what I finally figured out between last year and this year.
So, I don't want, because I know there's going to be locals listening to this podcast trying to get some details on this deer or whatever. Can you kind of explain, like, why where he was staying was crazy? Or, you know, I don't want to blow up your spot or have you give too much away. So if you say, you know, there's a certain thing that'll give it away, don't do it. But I'm just curious, like, what makes the spot he was living in crazy, you know?
So I'll just kind of put it this way. It's an area, obviously, there was no pressure. It was a very strange little piece of the neighboring property, kind of, that nobody ever did anything with. And it was up against, you know, I don't really know kind of how to say it. It was a little point, a little area where nobody went, nobody ever pressured, nobody ever occupied, because nobody would ever think a deer would be there. And it was literally not very far away from a person's house.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So that's
say
where,
no more.
We got it.
We're catching it.
So that's where I figured out a lot of his time that he was staying. And I believe the night that I killed him, he had to have been staying in that area, because he was not far at all. When he came into where I was at, you could tell he wasn't bedded very far, because he came in early. There was no way that he could have came across other certain places and everything like that and made it there by that time. So he had to have been bedded around that particular area as well.
Right. That makes sense.
Now it's going to be a question I had too. Like, did you shoot him in that area where he was core to, you know, cause you said, like, obviously he kind of grew out of that messed up left side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe this year without that messed up left side, maybe he's going to travel a little bit more and, like,
feeling normal again or something.
Normal, where he's going to get outside that comfort zone.
Interesting theory.
Yeah. No, I killed him right in the area that he had been staying a couple of years prior, and I kind of figured out there. He still wasn't going very far at all, because I was only getting pictures of him just down on that particular spot.
That's awesome.
Very cool. It's interesting as hell.
And I guarantee you, when you've seen pictures of him this year, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, break that down.
He doesn't have that messed up left side, and he is a monster.
So, you know, ever since I found his shed in February, I've had this buck in the back of my mind ever since, but I never really thought that I would ever have a chance to kill him, because I've never had enough photos and history with the deer to ever figure out what the heck he was even doing, staying, where to target him, nothing. So, you know, going into this season, he was in the back of my mind. I was like, you know, I really want to wait and see if I ever can get photos of this deer. You know, I really didn't, I don't have ever much in early season. I don't really get too excited until towards the end of October here in November. Some mm-hmm. other decent deer will start showing up. But I had created a scrape line kind of down on that end, on the edge of a field there. And I had put a camera on the actual kind of fence crossing there between the oaks and the hay field where I had found his shed, exact spot that I found his shed in February on a fence post. So it was, trying to think of what day it was. It was Wednesday, the Wednesday before I killed him. So I killed him on the 10th. So it would have been that Wednesday. I had checked my scrape line camera there. And I'm scrolling through it real fast, and then boom, and I immediately almost threw up, like legitimately almost threw up in the hayfield. I was a mess.
Almost shit your pants right there in the field, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, I love how you describe it like, boom, there it is.
Yeah, that's
whammy.
I've been seeing that caliber of a deer out of nowhere. I was like, holy crap.
Like someone just threw a grenade right at you.
Yeah, and he was just staring like he was right over top of my scrape that I created, and he was just staring at the camera. I was like, oh my. The first thing I thought was, that is a booner, a total booner, the biggest buck I've ever saw in my life. And I was so flipping excited that I like ran across the field.
Cooning and hollering.
Yeah, I ran clear across the field, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've got to call Clint. I'm calling Clint and calling Clint, and he won't answer. He won't answer. I was like, oh, my God, Clint, answer your phone, because I was so pumped to tell him. I was like, he finally showed up.
Did you know that right away when you seen that picture that that was this deer?
You don't have to, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Like a monster like that.
And I was such an idiot because – I was so excited and like half throwing up that I was an idiot and never checked the other camera where he had dropped his shed. And I went back to the house and I'm in a panic and I'm like, I bet you anything that buck came across that stupid fence crossing and I never checked that camera. And you know, I had to work the next couple days, so I couldn't go in and hunt. I couldn't go back in and check the camera. And it was eating at me that I knew that I guarantee that's where he came from.
Right, right.
And then, so that Saturday, the 10th, when I killed him, is when I went in, I checked the scrape line camera again. He was on that again. And then I checked the fence crossing camera. And note, that whole week was the red moon. Saturday was the last night of or last day of the red moon, and then we had a front coming in Saturday night and all the rain moving in Sunday. So I checked that fence crossing camera, and by God, that sucker was going by that camera in them oaks on that crossing every single day from the day before red moon started clear through when I checked the camera in 3 days in the daylight. And
no,
I about died.
I would puke.
I immediately called Clint. I was like, dude, I think I can kill this deer. If I can get in a tree on this crossing, I think I can kill this flipping deer.
Right, right. Oh, man. I can imagine the anxiety
3 days
you felt.
Oh,
because I always say it at work, like, I got deer anxiety. Like,
I wouldn't be able to fucking sleep if I know that deer is crossing there. He crossed there every day.
In the day.
And then for 3 days, he's crossing there in the daylight.
Dude, the amount of anxiety I would feel as a deer hunter, I would just freaking explode. Dude,
daylight pictures just get you going.
So, okay, so you're
I might call in sick even if I don't have any sick days and get fired.
Oh, yeah. I'm taking no pay day. Fire me. Cool.
Yeah, fire me.
So
yeah, that's about how I was feeling after seeing that deer. I was like, I don't even want to go to work anymore.
That's okay. So I can only imagine what that feels like. So, okay, daylight pictures. You call Clint. Hey, I think I can kill this deer.
Oh, I bet you Clint is screaming at you.
I think I can kill this deer. But the shitty part of the whole thing was I had to work that Saturday. So by the time I checked the camera, it was like 1:30 when I had just checked the camera. You know, I like to get in a tree stand if I'm off, you know, by like 4 o'clock, you know, even in early season. And the rain was moving in, and it never even crossed my mind that I would be able to accomplish what I ended up doing that night, because I told Clint, I was going to go in on Sunday in the pouring rain, and I was going to hang a stand and hunt it. If it wasn't raining Sunday evening, I was going to hunt it Sunday evening, and then I was off that Monday, and I was going to hunt there all day Monday. And he's like, whoa, hold it right there. His exact words was, you are getting your ass in a tree tonight, and you are going to kill that buck. You know how Clint talks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's screaming at you at this point.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude, I was like, how am I supposed to do that? I'm like, it's 1:30. I have not eaten lunch. I have, like, nothing accomplished. I was like, I have no idea how I'm going to be able to pull that off and get into a stand early enough to hunt. He's like, you got to do it now. You got to stop what you're doing. Go right now and take a shower, get your clothes, get the tree stand, and get your ass out there, and you've got to kill this deer tonight. And I'm like, okay.
Thank God for Clint, right?
I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, okay, boss, I will go and do that.
So, yes, boss.
Like, I didn't even eat lunch, and I came back to the house, and I literally – and it was pretty warm out that day, and I told him, I was like, I'm worried about sweating to death, trying to hang in the stand, and then I'm going to stink. I'm trying to put my hunting clothes on over raunchy, sweaty body odor. I was like, I don't know about all this, but I came, I got my shower, and – luckily, I had an extra, like, a backpacking stand and sticks that was easy for me to hang on my own, and I packed up all of my gear that I was going to need, you know, all my safety harness stuff, all my hunting clothes, my bow, everything, and I somehow, it was hard because, note, I'm, like, 110 pounds soaking wet, so.
I was just going to say that for you to do all of that by yourself is impressive as hell.
Yes. So I had my whole entire vehicle full of stuff, and I'm like, I have it all on the ground. I'm like, how the hell am I going to take all this stuff back through there? I have to cross over two gates that I can't open, over another fence, through the brush. I was like, there is no way this is going to happen. But I did it. I hauled everything in. My back felt about broke by the time I got there.
Hey, you fucking did it, didn't you?
I did it. It was a miracle. I loaded, hauled all that stuff in there, and I look around, and I'm like, there was literally only one tree because I didn't have enough arms to carry a saw in to cut shooting lanes if I needed to.
You're right.
So I'm like, well, there's only one tree here that I can put a tree stand in, and this has got to be the most gnarliest, flipping, nastiest tree I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm even going to be able to physically get a stand in this tree. But it's the only tree I had to work with where I wouldn't have to cut shooting lanes. There was no other option. And the wind was perfect, and it was the only place where I could get a shot at the big opening where he would come across to go towards that crossing. So, and note, this tree, I don't even know how big in diameter. It is a shag bark hickory tree.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Terrible for hanging a stand in.
Yeah. And it's real gnarly. It's got limbs coming off of it everywhere, clear down towards the bottom of the tree. And then it's got this big crooked bend in it. And then the tree splits at like 15 feet in the air. And it's so big around at the bottom that I packed in enough sticks to where I could get to probably 20 feet. Well, problem was the tree was so big around towards the bottom that I had to actually take a strap off another climbing stick and rig it to the strap on the first climbing stick and have a double strap to even get the stick on the tree.
Classic move.
Been there.
Yeah, been there, but it sucks. Yeah.
It sucks. It's terrible.
It was awful, and luckily I could rig it to where it worked, and it was the bottom step, thank God. And so I had to leave one tree stick laying at the bottom of the tree, and I'm like, I have to do this to where I'm not having to climb up and down the tree, because the lineman's belt, I mean, you physically cannot get a lineman's belt up and down a shag bark hickory tree.
No,
like,
that's
the
worst.
It was literally almost impossible. Like, I almost killed myself.
And especially that diameter, too.
Oh, yeah. Man. I know everything you're talking about, and I can't imagine the anxiety and hurry you must be feeling at this point.
Yeah, I was like, I was.
What time of day is it right now? When you're right. Just getting to the bottom of the tree, throwing the strap around, trying to figure all this out.
So I would say it's probably pushing 3 o'clock.
And what time are you like in your mind for from trail camera information? Are you expecting this deer to walk by?
Well, he came in kind of low light in the evening or early in the morning. But since that front was coming in and the clouds came over, it was about to start raining. Like, honestly, deer could be moving at any point.
Right.
You know,
right.
At this time, because the weather was just perfect to where, honestly, deer could move all day long.
Deer anxiety is running through your veins.
Oh, you're panicking at this point. Yeah.
I would be too.
Yeah, pretty much, because I actually got stuck on the side of the tree a couple times because my lineman's belt got so ledged in the shag bark on that tree that I honestly didn't think I was going to be able to get it out. It was really nerve-wracking, and the sticks and stuff, because of that bark, they kept slipping on me, and I kept slipping down the tree, and it was just an ungodly sketchy situation. I'm lucky I didn't kill myself completely, but I finally got the last stick was where the tree kind of came out towards me, which was even worse because the stick was leaning back towards me, and that's how I had to climb up that stupid thing.
Right.
And I had to actually hang the stand because it just kind of all ended up wrong. So I had to have the last stick was coming back over top of me kind of, and then I had to hang the tree stand on the right split of the tree, but where I needed it to be, it was hitting the other split to where the platform was like crooked.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to like bring it back towards the stick almost, where it was like half over top of the stick. And I mean, it was the craziest setup. I finally got it up there and I'm like, as much noise as I made and as rigged as everything was, I'm like, it's going to be a wonder if I even see a deer or if I just don't completely fall out of this tree tonight and kill myself.
right. Man, the like, struggle of like, that's a legit hang and bang. That's just like reality of it. I don't care what setup you have.
Oh, yeah.
How many times have you been frustrated?
Dude, I did that last weekend trying to hang a stand. I wanted to get in this one opening, this little patch of woods. Can't get in. There's no good tree. I ended up sitting one night two sticks high because that's all the further I could get up to
Or how many times have you got up in the tree, you got your stand set, you sit in the tree and you're like, this is fucking terrible.
This sucks. Yeah.
Those are the worst.
It's just part of it. But when you nail it, you nail it.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So I think anybody that's ever done hanging hunts or hung enough stands, you run into every one of these situations. You just happen to hit all of them in one pass.
Emily, I can see your struggle right now. Like, we've all been there.
I'd be cussing, sweating, and pissed that of deer anxiety. That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'd be feeling it full force.
And you're rushed.
It was awful. And you want to know the other truth about it? This was technically my first hang and bang that I've ever done.
No kidding.
And it was one freaking rough one too, let me tell you.
Yeah, you hit all the rough hang and bang I guess obstacles that you can hit.
Yeah, but you got it out of the way on the first one, so now you're good to go.
Yeah, I don't honestly, there is no hang and bang that could possibly be that hard ever again.
Well, I mean, I'd do it all over if I get that buck.
Yeah, it was awful. And, you know, as much noise as I made, I literally had all the straps to all the climbing sticks and stuff around my neck, and I had all the sticks around my neck to where I wouldn't have to keep going up and down the tree. So I had all that weight hanging off of me on top of trying to hook stuff around the trees, my lineman belt getting caught on everything.
Clanking together.
Oh, yeah, it was awful. And then trying to get the tree stand halfway leveled where I could stand in it and not fall off the side of it. I mean, it was a nightmare. So, long story short, I finally got into the stand at 4:32 on the dot is when I finally sat down, was said, okay, I'm ready to go. So, it was 4:32 when I finally got in there. And luckily the clouds came over, it got kind of breezy, so I didn't sweat much, which was really good, but I carried all my scent spray and stuff with me, and I just drenched the ground at the bottom of the tree, drenched the tree going up.
She's taking a shot of it.
Drenched myself.
Pour on your head.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and then as soon as I got settled in, it started to rain, which actually was kind of a blessing because any scent that I made, you know, I was hoping that that rain kind of washed everything away, which is good. And it rained pretty good for probably 20 minutes to a half hour. I mean, I got pretty wet up there.
Perfect scenario, probably, you know, like.
Yeah, exactly. Especially after all that. but I was like, the wind was perfect and everything. I mean, it looked like a great evening, you know, for deer to be moving. I was like, man, it's like, I could only get 15 feet up in the tree. I had one stick laying at the bottom of the tree. And then my bow hanger crank, it slipped out of my hand. It went down over the bank. So I couldn't even get my bow hanger on there the way I was supposed to on the tree. As I had all this stuff laying all over the ground. No, nothing is going right at all. I was like, this is completely pointless. I'm not even going to see a deer. I'm 15 feet off the ground. They're going to see me when they walk in. I was like, there's no way this is going to happen. And I don't know. It got done raining, and it wasn't long after it got done raining. I was texting Clint and my buddy Tyler out in Montana. I was telling him, you know, I finally got in the stand, this, that, and the other. And I was on my phone, and I'd happen to just kind of hear something, and I look up, it's like 6:15, and I see something white kind of coming towards me. I'm like, oh, it's a deer. So I put my phone away, and the first thing I could see was like, there was a couple real big trees out in front of me, and I could see an antler clear on one side of this big tree and an antler clear on the other side. I'm like, holy shit. I was like, there's no other deer in the woods that's as wide as that deer.
Yeah, I was going to say, once you first saw him, you had to know.
Like, wow. I automatically knew it was him, so I hurried up, put my phone in my pocket. I got stood up, at least got that much, and he came because I was expecting him to come from the right and come across the opening. Well, he came straight at me, and I was really scared because if he would go to the fence crossing from where he came at, I honestly don't even know if I would have had a shot. So I got real nervous for a minute, but then he decided, he came straight at me. I got my bow, got ready and everything. And he even like looked right at the tree and everything, but you know, I caught him completely off guard. He had no idea it was there. He ended up turning and going across the opening to my right. So he was going to go down below me and I think feed on the oaks. There was a big oak behind me that the deer had been hammering. Mm-hmm. I think that's where he was headed. And he just miraculously at 18 yards turned perfectly broadside. And he even turned his head back the other direction for what I felt like was 5 minutes. I was able to draw back and take my time and settle in the pen and just drilled him. I mean, he didn't even know what had even hit him. Like, he hardly even took off running or anything. And then I heard him crash just like not even 50 yards down.
Wow.
Below me.
No kidding.
That is the best feeling ever.
So, okay, pause story.
Rewind.
So, when you say he hardly knew what happened, when you shoot him, are you watching your arrow zip through him? You hit offside shoulder? What are we talking right here?
From where I was at in the tree, I got a pass through from what I could see, but then I couldn't see my arrow either. So then I was like, well, the arrow must be, you know, it passed through, but yet it's still, you know, hanging out the other side.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I mean, it just went right through him like butter.
But you
like,
know, you smoked him, right?
Oh yeah. Cause it looked like it was a heart shot from what I could tell. Man, which it,
that's awesome.
I think I clipped part of the heart, part of the lungs right there. I mean, I completely toasted him.
So when you hear him crash, is this out of sight from where you're sitting?
Yeah, I cannot see him, but I could hear him crash.
Okay.
Because there's kind of some brush and stuff to the right, and he kind of went through it and down a little ravine there. But I heard this crash, and I was just like...
Crazy.
I immediately started calling everybody I could think of, and I called Clint. I can't even remember his first words. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the F word was in there several times, but he was just like, no effing way did you just do that? You've got to be kidding me. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm coming right now. Like, so I was calling everybody because I was texting all of my good friends right before he came in, and then I called him. I'm like, I just smoked the biggest buck of my life, and I was bawling my eyes out because I just could not believe it all came together.
That's,
it was insane.
That's amazing. Right. So how long – so you hear him crash. There's a moment in there before you get on the phone where it's just you in that moment. Explain that a little bit. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I can't even remember. All I remember was I shot that deer, and I think I just went to, like, another universe somewhere because I was just so dumbfounded that after all of that headache of trying to get that stand up there, not even thinking I was going to see anything, and then I just shot the buck of a lifetime. Like, I immediately just lost it. Like, I was just bawling my eyes out uncontrollably. I was perfectly calm when he came in, when I shot, wasn't shaking at all, but oh my gosh, as soon as it was over, I was shaking so bad that I had to actually stay in the tree for about 20 minutes or so because I couldn't even get down without falling.
I might have chucked my bow out of the stand.
Remember at that podcast I talked about my victory? If I shot a buck like that, my victory celebration? I just grab it by one limb and just frisbee my bow as far as I could into the timber.
But, oh my gosh.
But the thing is, it's like you'd have to know that deer's down because if you got to do a follow-up shot, you're really going to kick your own ass.
Right?
There's always that weird feeling, though, when between you shoot a buck.
There's a sliver of doubt always. A
sliver of doubt, and then you have to like recollect all your thoughts of like what just happened.
Yeah. Well, then there's that thought,
too. Sit
like,
down.
Like, did I hear him go down or didn't I hear him go down?
It was awful. I started second-guessing myself everything because obviously I heard a crash. I assumed it was him, you know, crashing and expiring, but then you don't know. You don't know if it was just him running through something.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, I couldn't see my arrow from the tree. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, he took off, you know, really slow. Like, he didn't even know what happened. I was like, did I miss him? But I was like, I don't think I see my arrow. Like, all this stuff just starts going through my mind. And I have to calm myself before I can even get down out of the tree to even see. So finally, after I called everybody, I was like, okay, I'm just going to get down. I'm at least going to verify that I hit the deer to see if I can see my arrow or if I can even see the first ounce of blood, and then I'm completely backing out. I'm not going any farther. So that's what I did. I got down, didn't see my arrow, so I knew I didn't miss him, and I knew that I got a pass-through of some sort because the arrow wasn't sticking out on my side of the deer when he took off. So I knew the arrow had to be, you know, hanging out the backside of him.
Yeah.
And then I did, after about 10 feet, I started to see blood. So that was good enough for me. And I turned around and I left and I went back home.
Yeah, don't blame you.
It's weird how much you question yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Even on perfect situations.
Like exactly. Like, she smoked him, but still in the back of your head, like, oh, did I hit him?
Don't take chances on deer like that, you know? So,
yeah.
So I don't blame you. I would have done the same exact thing.
I would have backed out also.
So I was glad that I, you know, didn't miss him for one. And for two, I knew that I didn't hit him in the shoulder or anything because obviously you're not going to get any penetration if you hit him in the shoulder. So I knew that I had to hit him in the perfect spot if I got a pass through.
Right.
So I was pretty confident about the shot and then hearing the crash and everything. So I was pretty confident with everything. But yeah, I went back to the house and then, you know, Clint, he was like, I'm coming down right now. I've got to find, you know, my mom's going to have to take care of my kids and I'm coming right now. Do not go in and get that buck without me. So, you know, in the meantime, Nathan and I were sitting here. Nathan, he had to take like 2 hours of comp time off of work because he works a midnight shift. I was like, you cannot go to work and not be here for the recovery. That just can't happen. You're going to have to call somebody.
Right.
So I was like, we have to wait for Clint. And it takes Clint exactly 2 hours to get to my house.
So, I love it.
We had to sit here for 2 hours, and I tell you what, it was the longest 2 hours of my life. I kept calling him. I'm like, where are you at? What is your estimated time of arrival? I can't sit here any longer.
That's hilarious. I can only imagine. But probably better, right? Like, the 2 hours probably the perfect time, like the perfect amount of time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have went in right away, realistically, but, you know, you would have kicked your own ass if you went in and jumped him or something. You know what I mean? Exactly. Something crazy.
You never know.
Yep, and I didn't on a deer that caliber, even though I thought I heard him crash, and I'm pretty sure I made a good shot. You know, those big old bucks, they are so tough, and they will do anything to live. So, you know, I didn't want to take any chances. So, you know, the 2 hours was fine because I knew it just, if he was still alive by any reason, it would get him, you know, longer time, you know, to expire and stuff. So we wouldn't jump him or anything. So, because right. That's the last thing I want to do is jump a deer of that caliber and then exactly. You can't find him after
right.
That.
So this is like back earlier when I told my little snippet of story, I talked to Clint as he's driving to your place. And I'm like, send me teaser pics, motherfucker. I was like, they're safe with me. I'm not going to post them on the internet. Like, just send me some teaser pics. Don't leave me out to dry because I know how you are. And then he didn't. And I started heckling. I'm like, send me pics. I won't share anywhere. And so I got a couple teaser pics. But anyway, that's where my story like ties into your story pretty much right here.
Yeah. He said that he had called you on the way down and stuff, and I know he, like, honestly, if you would have heard Clint on the phone, I swear he was more excited sounding than I was.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's the beautiful thing about Clint. He's just or more excited for his close friends to kill something than he is.
And everyone knows listening to this podcast how Clint is.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
He's such a like an enthusiastic person about everything.
Passionate. And,
you know, Clint, he kind of feels like he had a journey with his deer, you know, kind of like I did, obviously, because, you know, whenever I found that buck shed, I immediately called him. I was flipping a lid because I found that buck shed. You know, it was one of the biggest sheds I'd ever found, and I was so pumped. You know, I was, you know, running information by him on what he thinks I should do. We were looking at maps. We were just trying to figure out what this deer was doing, even though he had never saw the property. He'd never been down here before. You know, he feels like he kind of had a little part in it, too. And obviously, if it wasn't for him for kicking me in the ass and acting like my mother, father, whatever he was acting like, you know, I may still not have killed that deer because – honestly, I didn't physically think I was going to accomplish the night that I killed him what I was actually able to accomplish. So, you know, because of him is the reason why I probably have this deer right now, because he had just made me, you know, do what I didn't think that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I think he was just so excited because he kind of had a part in it as well. And everything, so he was just super pumped.
you kind of included him on the whole story. He knew about it. He was your motivational speaker. He was your Matt Foley to get you in there and get it done. No, that's awesome. Like, that's cool that you waited for him. It's cool that you have a friend willing to drive in there just for a deer recovery.
Those
are people you need in your deer hunting life.
Oh, for sure.
Yep, exactly. They definitely, you know, Clint being my absolute best friend has really kind of kept me motivated, you know, when you're starting to, you know, doubt yourself, and then he kind of brings you back up and then sparks, you know, something like, okay, well, maybe try this or do this or, you know, be patient. This will show up or that'll show up and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, it helps to really have a good, close hunting friend like that to kind of keep you on your toes and keep you going.
And you need someone you look up to like bounce things off of, like no matter who you are, you know, you need that
like reassurance.
Well, it's like there's so much unknown. Nobody knows exactly what a deer is going to do. There's every situation's new. Every situation's unique. Like this is the type of like fine tuned details that maybe the Western community that kind of laughs at whitetail hunter, tree stand, ladder stand guys, they laugh at that. Like, this is the top of the top right here. This is
the cream of the crop.
This is the cream of the crop of the whitetail killers. It's like what we're talking. Like,
oh, yeah.
People that are lazy don't hang and bang and set up on deer like this and kill giant deer like this. It just does not happen. Or it doesn't happen consistently.
Sure.
And that's the key. But, so Clint gets there. He's got a 2-hour drive. He finally gets there. You got to be freaking out because you're like, it's time to go in after this deer.
I am, like, you know, we even made supper. I couldn't even eat. Like, I don't think I like ate for 3 days after that. And I
supper, aka
sleep.
A bowl of cereal to get the hell out there.
Yeah, like, I didn't even sleep for like 3 total days because my mind was just going a million miles an hour because I was just still couldn't even believe what I had just done. But yeah, so Clint showed up, you know, Nathan took a couple hours of comp time. My dad, he came out. So there were all four of us. You know, we went in and we started to, which Clint, he was kind of falling behind us, and my dad, Nathan, was in front following the blood trail, and I was kind of the middleman, Clint was recording, you know, behind me. And so we went in and we found the first bit of blood, and there really wasn't much blood, which kind of concerned me. But from killing, you know, deer previous to this one, it seems like they don't really bleed much for the first, like, I don't know, 20 yards or so. And then all of a sudden it just, they start pouring out. So then we started getting into really good blood, lung blood. And then, you know, I can't remember if it was Nathan or my dad. I mean, like I said, we didn't even go 50 yards, maybe 40 yards. And then Nathan was like, well, there he is. And I'm like, don't be joking with me right now. Is he really there? Like, you cannot do this to my heart right now. And yeah, there he was. He was crashed right in a ravine, like nose face down, heading down towards. And I mean, he was completely toasted. I mean, I made a perfect shot on him.
So he died right where you thought he died.
Yep, exactly. That crash, where I heard the crash, was where he ended up. But I mean, it was just, I just, like, my emotion, I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? And Clint on the recording on his story was like, Emily, what did you just do? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm me. I don't know.
Like, everybody was just, and my dad is the type of person that he's not really, like, a complimenting type of person, or he doesn't want to, you know, make you feel like you did something awesome. And normally when you do something awesome, he usually doesn't say anything. And he just, like, he said nothing. Like, I think he was just completely at a loss of words.
I know how you feel. My old man's the same way.
Yep. So yeah, he was a complete loss of words with everything.
No kidding.
That's
so
awesome. Congratulations to again.
What a fucking giant.
Thank you.
What I want to know. So, you find him, you see him crashed, obviously. Give me the, I want to know the emotion of
play by play of what happened.
You going down and picking up this buck.
So, like, I think I was just in such shock.
By the way, real quick, for you, tell the story. When I just said picking up this buck, for the guys, Eric and Doug in the studio, just watch me hold my arms out on each beam, like
you were picking them up,
like 25 inches apart, and going, picking up this buck and setting up a rack. Why I said that, just so you know, like, what I'm doing right now. So you'll I do these things, so when you finally come to studio with Clint and we do a podcast in person, you'll know that, like,
we do hand gestures.
I do main beam grabbing hand gestures when I'm doing it right now as I'm talking.
You gotta grab the beam.
Yeah, there it is, picking up this buck, and I'm still doing it, for the record. But anyway, I just wanted you to know that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I just, like, I think I was honestly in such shock that it all came together, and I had just killed this buck of a lifetime that I never honestly thought I would even have an opportunity to kill, that, like, I just had grabbed the whole, like, he was there for so long, he was stiff as a board. So, and you know me, I was like trying to move him. He said, "Daggum bait, you won't even move."
Waste but, three times as you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I grab a hold of his rack. I was just like I didn't even honestly even know what to, like I was just so just in shock. Like, I didn't even know what to say, how to feel, what to do. Like, I was just like a deer in the headlight looking at this thing.
Oh my gosh. I can't imagine. I would have cried my fucking face out.
Oh, well, luckily I already had done that earlier while I was there by myself. You're so nobody had to see that again.
You're spent.
I just can't cry anymore.
Yeah, there was no tears left to cry. I was dried out from earlier.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
But yeah, it was crazy. Clint, he was videoing, talking about it for his story, and then I started videoing for my story and stuff, and I'm like, I just killed the biggest buck of my life.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
I couldn't even imagine that.
Honestly, I was just honestly, I'm still in shock. Like, I still don't feel like it's real, because it's something that I never thought that I would ever accomplish, and for me to accomplish that crazy hang and bang thing on my own is just mind-blowing to me, because that was really tough for me to do that and carry all that in and about killing myself on that tree. And I kept telling myself I can't do it, but then I kept making myself do it. It just, all of it just coming together like that to me still is just really hard to believe that it actually worked.
I mean, you did all the work. Like it was all on you and you pulled it off. It's, that's got to feel amazing.
It does feel amazing. It makes me feel like all the years of hard work, and then my 2019 season was so rough. I hunted almost 60 days in the stand during bow season from the beginning clear to the end. You know, I had so many close calls. I passed up so many deer, and I just couldn't ever seal the deal on anything. And it just, like, after 2019 season, I learned so much. I felt like I was doing everything possibly wrong in 2019 season. But you honestly, you don't realize what you're doing wrong until you sit out there and you have an unsuccessful season and you sit out there for that many days. And then you really realize how much you're screwing up, which I completely changed everything for 2020 season. And I mean, it completely made a huge difference in my success this year because of how bad last year was.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, some of those humbling years where you feel like you're just like you're a shit bow hunter because we all have those, doing it all wrong.
Yep.
Those are the most valuable years because, yeah, killing bucks consistently is cool, right? Like, but it's not like you killed a buck and went 10 years without killing another buck type of deal. Like, that is the deal. Like, not everything always works out every season.
Sure.
Like, it's it sucks when you're someone that strives and is hard on yourself on killing a good buck every year. But, like, you guys both know, like, I got lucky. Like, I've been through this. I went 2 years without killing a buck. And then I felt like shit about myself. And I'm learning. And then I kind of regroup. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm hunting different deer than the average hunter. But I always look up to guys that are, or guys and gals, that are big buck killers. So then I'm hard on myself because of that. So I'm trying to strive to kill big bucks, which is not easy with a bow. Eric and Doug, you guys kind of had that feeling last year.
Yeah.
And but it's just part of it. Doesn't mean you're not a good bow hunter, but you can't control what a wild animal does, but it's on you to make the moves. It's a chess game. But that deer, I mean, the difference in Emily is you put the work in, you put all the effort into killing this buck. That buck could have just got up and went the other direction simply because he felt like it. And then
right behind that tree where you seen the antlers on both sides, he could turn around
and went
you thought he was going.
Yeah, and then she would be back at the drawing board being like, I suck. I'm hard. You're being hard on yourself. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
You're regrouping. You're pulling that stand. You're doing it again. That, you know, that's the only difference. And, you know, you do all the work. You put the work in. You got to just hope that buck sticks to what you think he's going to do, but he doesn't have to. So,
exactly.
An unsuccessful season doesn't mean you're a shit bow hunter, but it also doesn't mean you're not going to feel that way because that feeling is what creates successful bow hunters.
Oh, absolutely.
In the future,
you might feel
you're
like
going to beat yourself up.
You might feel like shit. You're going to beat yourself up, but I guarantee you learned a shit ton that shitty year you had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Guaranteed.
I learned so much stuff. Like, I learned my stand setups were wrong. Like, everything in 2019 was just wrong. But was it wrong, or was it just that it didn't,
like, the plan didn't go as smooth as it could have? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well,
you're being hard on yourself, but
you are.
It was a combination of both. One thing was I got another new property to hunt, and where I had thought deer were traveling from sign and note, trying to figure out where deer are traveling and what deer are going to do in the winter, in the middle of summer when you're hanging a stand, is nearly impossible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did the best I could. I thought that I hung a stand in the right place. But then once I started hunting it, like I said, it was a new property, so I'd never had, you know, the time on it to even really see what deer were doing. And then I realized the stand was in the wrong place, the thermals was always wrong. The wind was always right, but the thermals was wrong, and everything was pulling wrong, and I was sticking out like a sore thumb. I didn't have enough cover. Like, everything was just completely wrong. And then, you know, and it's hard to move. It's different if it's kind of like a small hang-and-bang setup, but when you have a big, colossal, you know, hang-on stand and sticks, And honestly, when I was hanging that stand, you can ask Clint, I actually thought that I broke my arm in the process of hanging that stand by myself, because that was so brutal because the stand weighed so much. And then my arm was screwed up for a couple weeks after that. So it wasn't like it was simple for me to just take it down and move it to another area, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So that spot was pretty well screwed for the year. And then, you know, my other areas and stuff either just didn't have the deer, or my stand was kind of in the wrong tree. The way deer was coming in was not, you know, I needed to have my stand in a different tree, kind of like on this other property. You know, just all a bunch of different things. And then the weather, we had a lot of weird weather too, which yeah. I don't know, made deer movement really wacky. We had a lot of warm temperatures, a lot of rain. So it was really the combination of everything, not having enough time off. So just all of it playing together just kind of just made the whole season a flop.
It was kind of 2020 yeah. being 2020 the way this fucking year's been going.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was the same way. I mean, me and Eric kind of, if we would have moved the stand earlier, we could be in a different story, but.
Right, last season, yes.
But hunting's the shoulda, woulda, coulda game.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
You do, it's, so this is what I always remember growing up, and this still holds true. I hunted a spot where there was, and I don't know, like, the correct terminology. We called them short spoils, which it was just like an old coal stripping area, mm-hmm. where it was just basically like big hill, big hill, big hill, big hill, like one right after another. And I never did it because I was younger when we hunted the spot. But I remember one guy would hang a stand on one short spoil because the deer would run them. They'd run like north, south, or east, west, depending on what spoils you're in. So just stripping area for coal mining, I guess. I don't know. I don't know all that much about it. But they'd hunt one spoil, which is just a big hill. And then, but it's like hill after hill. It'd be like if you were on a dirt bike and it was clear, you could jump from one to the other.
Right.
But they were like steep in between. So you'd hunt the tops of them because bucks would run the tops. And it'd be like, you'd hunt one spoil, but you'd see the buck three spoils over. Well, then you pull your stand and you move three spoils over and you hunt that spoil and you look over and he's where you were.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you can play that game all day.
For sure.
It's a shoulda, woulda, coulda. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff you don't know until you know. And that might be kind of gray. I don't know if I explained that well enough, but it's a game of chance to a point because the deer can walk wherever it wants to walk.
It's a game of chess, for sure.
It's a chess game, man. You know, you can set up in the corner of a hayfield and the buck comes in right on the hayfield every day, but as soon as you sit there, he might be 80 yards out the other way and walk in the other direction. Like, it's just part of
it. It's that old kind of saying. It's like, you can be the best hunter in the world, but that deer is going to do whatever the fuck that deer wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, part of the fun.
Right.
It's and no offense, Emily, and I'm not saying that you were a Girl Scout, but this is one of the dudes told me, he said, if bow hunting was easy, the Girl Scouts would do it. And I know that's fucked up on this podcast, but that's what he said.
2020, man, I can't say that.
I'm not saying selling cookies is hard, but everybody likes cookies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, as soon as you think you have a deer figured out, then you go hang a stand, and then they're doing the complete opposite thing the next day. So,
I mean,
like you said, like, that's what happened a lot last year, too. You know, I thought I had a deer figured out, and the next thing you know, it's cleared a different area, or I would sit in a stand for 9 days straight, and he wouldn't show up, and then the day after that I didn't, the 10th day that I didn't sit in the stand, then he decided to show up in the daylight, you know, all that kind of crazy stuff. That's kind of how it all went. And then, you know, I kind of had a big mature old buck figured out from 2018 season that he would show up like the last week of October, and he would show up a bunch in the daylight at this particular area. And so I was counting on the same thing in 2019, and you know, it worked. He showed up the last week of October and in daylight, just like he did in 2018. So I was ready for him. I was up, ready to go. And by God, if he didn't show up, I think it was October 30th or 31st last year that he had showed up. And this deer was so old and smart, too, that he came in twice, two different times, you know, kind of chasing does around a little bit. And he was within 15 yards of me two different times the one evening there at the end of October. And I could never get a shot at him because he was always facing me. He would never – the way he would come in, it's like he knew – that I was in that stand and he would never be broadside. He would go all the way down and around as far as he could go down the ridge. And then he would come up straight at me and the doe was behind me. And is one of those situations where he would never turn, he never cooperate, and then when he went to take off, he would literally whirl around like a cutting horse and just take off running straight back down the opposite direction. Oh, like, it was the craziest thing ever, and I never could get a shot at that deer, ever. And I had him at 15 yards twice.
Oh, that's frustrating.
He knew you were there, and he was just screwing with you.
That's frustrating.
Oh, I guarantee it. I mean, it was just insane.
So, real quick, because I don't want to forget to do this. I want to go back to the freak buck. Let's talk about dimensions and specs and score.
That's probably a good idea.
Just and if you don't want to do the score number thing, I understand that. But this buck is impressive from every aspect.
Yeah, so obviously the thing that makes him so impressive is the spread and then his giant split brows on both sides. Big bladed split brows at that. So his inside spread was 23 2/8.
That's fucking huge. Sorry.
Was his inside. I did more measuring the other evening because I had a measuring just like the stick on tape that just kept adding up the score when I did it the first time. So I couldn't.
Don't tell me you measured this thing with trophy tape, Emily.
I did.
Golly.
Oh, God.
The first time I did.
Was it 240? I would have drove to Ohio just to eliminate that process if you would have called me. I'm a measurer. I would have been like, I'm bringing my kit. I'm on my way. Tell Clint to wait for me.
Pissed Kurt off.
I don't blame you. If you shoot a buck like that, you know, just if you ever see Matt Busbus, just hit him in his face for me, will you?
Yeah, so sorry. I did measure him that night with the trophy tape.
Son of a
like
bitch,
said,
Emily.
With that, you can't really figure out what is what. It just all adds up, which I hate. But I did remeasure stuff the other night. Like I said, he was 23 2/8 inside spread, and his brow tines they were both over 10 inches. One might have been right on 11 inches.
Wow.
And the other was 10 and some change. I can't remember. And his one beam, I had it at 27 inches, and the other was almost 26 around there. So it was just kind of like an inch off.
Wow. That's a big.
Between both beams. But he grossed at 190 2/8.
That is impressive.
Monster.
27 inch beams is huge. I mean, 10, almost 11 inch brows is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. His G3s are really long too. They were both over 10 inches as well, I do believe.
Wow. That is amazing. That's what Clint would call framey.
Yeah. Yes. He was very framey.
Definitely a framey buck.
That's a good grief.
Yeah. It's a good grief buck.
He had it all. I mean, his bases were pretty massive. They were over 5 inches, but like his actual beams and stuff, he was kind of weird, like kind of how his beams and stuff laid out. They were kind of like thin and kind of, I don't even know how to describe
spindly.
It.
Spindly?
Kind of dippy, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Kind of weird, but his actual beams really, his mass wasn't that heavy out through his beams. I think, like I said, his bases were over 5, and then his next mass measurement was over, I think was just over 4, and the other two were actually only 3 inches in some.
No kidding. See, you know,
yeah, so he was kind of weird.
I thought that when I looked at him, like, man, the only thing that, like, and I would never nitpick a buck like that, but if you're going to be a dick about it, I'd be like, he loses mass, but that might be, and when I looked at him, like, that's the only thing that keeps that deer from touching 200.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, I mean,
the mass all the way through.
Bases were good, but then once you got out on his beams were thin, which is really kind of weird.
But I couldn't tell, like, because his beam, he's so framey and big and gappy looking. Like, I didn't know if that's because he looked like he might have lost a little mass because of how big and spaced out he was. Like,
yeah,
it was just
how
like
long his beams were.
Yeah. Like, if it was an illusion. So that buck, Clint was like, hey, what do you think this thing goes? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I originally I said 206 gross was my guess.
Yeah.
Which I if you would have told me that, I'd be like, yeah, okay. You know?
Yeah, yeah, true. I mean,
yeah, I was right on the money.
Yeah. Congratulations. An absolute giant.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, congratulations. It's an amazing buck.
Well earned. Well earned. Hard earned. I mean, for sure. That's the way this is the perfect story. It really is.
Yeah, honestly, you couldn't get a better story. You couldn't get a better of, you know, how rough it was trying to make it all come together, and then it just came together like it was just meant to be. You know, the best shot I've ever made on a whitetail. Just everything happened just picture perfect, textbook perfect, like it should have been. Like, I've never had that happen with any other whitetail that I've ever killed.
It's impressive.
I'm looking at it again. Those freaking brow tines
are insane. It's impressive.
I'm in love with brow tines.
Not only the hang and hunt, the effort put in, all that stuff, the composure mentally you had to have had to make the shot you did and still wait the time for like Clint to get there and do the recovery the right way, the responsible way. Like, that all is impressive just as much as doing the hang and hunt and all that and
well,
getting it done.
Well, that tells you how much of a hunter she is.
Well, it proves how legit you are. Yes, it's exactly. It's awfully impressive.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it about killed me waiting that 2 hours, but I knew obviously it was for the best. And then, you know, for Clint to be here too, you know, and everything, it was hard to wait 2 hours, but I definitely knew it was the right thing to do. Nathan was like, can we just go out there and find it? And then Clint could just meet up with it. It was like, no, we have to wait till he gets here.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's better off to just, the longer we wait, the better, because you just never know. You don't want to bump him up or anything like that, because, I mean, these deer, these big mature bucks are, I mean, their will to live is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's different.
You just never know what they'll do.
It, absolutely. No, I think you did everything right, and obviously it proves. And Ohio is a one buck state, if I think I'm correct.
Yep.
And so what now? You're relaxing, huh?
Well, honestly, I'm not. I mean, the pressure is off, you know, a little bit, obviously. But, you know, the work never stops. I mean, I have several properties that I do stuff on. I've got cameras all over God's green earth on all these properties. Like today, I was actually off work today, and I legitimately spent almost the whole entire day checking cameras, you know, kind of gaining some intel on some scrapes, rubs, what's going on, where the bucks are spending most of their time, you know, because honestly, if the work ends for you when you kill a buck, then you're not really working.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the work never stops for me, because now, you know, I'm still going to be running cameras, you know, running mineral, you know, doing all my same normal stuff. Nothing is going to slow down for me at all. Clear pass through shed season, you know, because now I have to try to, you know, gain enough intel and find another buck to create a story and, you know, a journey with, just like I did with the Freak and the Flyer 10. So, you know, you have to find another buck now that you think that might turn into something, and you try to grow him into something and pass him up and try to get other people to pass him up if possible. And
yeah.
So it's just a big cycle. Now it's harder. The work is going to be harder now than what it was, because now I have to start completely over with. Like, I don't have a buck that I really know that I want to follow yet. And so I got to find one and, you know, figure out what deer is going to be a good potential buck, and then completely start all over again.
I love it. I love the mindset. It's inspiring. It's incredible. I mean, I think you're the perfect role model for new lady hunters or just striving lady hunters.
It's crazy just looking at this buck that you just shot. Like, for my 8.5-year-old, the face, like, there's so many, like, they look very the same.
It's got that old man
look.
The big
old Roman nose and the lazy eyes. Like, that, my 8.5-year-old, it looks almost identical in the face.
It's like the old dog look.
His face was, like, getting real, like, gray and white.
Yep.
And, you can tell by looking at him. And he was definitely an old deer for sure.
That's exactly how mine was.
That's awesome. Well, one day, we got, maybe later this winter after season's all closed up for everybody, get you and Clint in studio on a podcast and get you out, maybe out here for the bow shoot. We'll get you out there too, but podcast time's
awesome.
Hard to do then, but maybe after season, you know, trade shows are going to be hit and miss with COVID. So it's a good time for us to just get people in studio and conversate for real. But no, thank you for coming on. I know I called podcast dibs on this the day you shot that buck. And, so I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. It means a ton to us. And
hey, not a problem. I appreciate you guys having me.
Of course. We are super happy for you, and we are definitely big fans of yours. And
congrats.
Congrats again.
You're,
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't really plug it before, but like you're in Peterson's and tell people where to find you everywhere. Like, you know, your articles on Instagram, Facebook, or wherever.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I don't get too fancy with any other social media stuff, just Instagram and Facebook, mainly Instagram. But yeah, I'm with, you know, Peterson Bow Hunting. So I'm doing some content creating and some contributing for them. I'm going to start writing some articles, so on and so forth. I do a lot of stuff for Onyx Hunt as well, photography and stuff for them and with DSG. So yeah, those are pretty much all the places you can find me, mainly on Instagram. I do a lot of photography stuff on Instagram.
Go ahead and plug your handle there. I'll link it all in the description, but just for people listening that don't look at that stuff.
Sounds good. Yeah, my Instagram is Shad Emily, pretty simple. Facebook, Emily Shad, so just the opposite way. So yeah, pretty simple to find me.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Well, awesome. I mean, anything? Did we miss anything? I feel the story is just incredible, and it's a perfect big buck story.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really think we missed anything. We pretty well covered it all.
I love it. All right. Well, anybody, Eric, Doug, you got anything to close out with?
No, just congrats again, Emily, and way to go for kicking ass and sticking in there and getting the job done.
Hey, I definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, congrats again. You deserved it. That's awesome.
There it is. All right. Congrats, Emily. You're the shit, whether you admit it or not.
You're the shot. You're the shot.
You are what Clint might say, a bad bitch. And and I'm going to close it out there. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.